Hello and welcome to Banfield. Move over midterm. Something else shook Washington today. The first woman ever to hold the gavel as Speaker of the House is stepping down after serving under four presidents. To be clear, it was the American people who decided that Nancy Pelosi should hand over the gavel in January. But it was Nancy Pelosi who decided to walk away from being a leader of any kind in the upcoming Congress. Here's how she broke the news on the floor today.
Never would I have thought that someday I would go from homemaker to House Speaker. I have enjoyed working with three presidents, achieving historic investments in clean energy with President George Bush, transformative health care reform with President Barack Obama, and forging the future from infrastructure to health care to climate action with President Joe Biden. And with great confidence in our caucus, I will not seek re-election to Democratic leadership in the next Congress.
I am sure you didn't miss it, but perhaps it wasn't a surprise that she did not mention another president, President Trump. But speaking of the Republicans, they have spent the past 2 years planning for the next 2 years or 4 years or maybe even more. And those are the plans that are going to affect you. Plans you will start to see day in and day out on the news and on your feeds. So what exactly is on Kevin McCarthy's agenda? Well, most of it starts with president and ends with Biden. Kelly Meyer from News Nation joining me now live with that. You know, Kelly, half the country is thrilled with that plan and with what lies ahead, and the other half of the country not so much. What were the Republicans saying today?
Well, you know, and they don't officially start until the new Congress or take over until the new Congress in the new year, but they're already laying out their plans. And as you said, much of the focus of that is on President Biden and his family.
Republicans ready to take back the House and put President Joe Biden on notice.
This evidence raises troubling questions about whether President Biden is a national security risk.
Today, House Republicans already lining up their plans to investigate the Biden family, set to dive into Hunter Biden's business dealings with countries like Russia and China. The president's son says he's handled his affairs legally.
Has all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation.
It's the first taste of what a house under GOP control could look like. Investigations will range from the Biden family to the origins of COVID-19 to America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. There also could be some impeachment attempts. Some members want to impeach the Homeland Security Secretary over the border crisis. They also want to impeach the Attorney General and Biden himself. And the first thing Republican leader Kevin McCarthy says they'll do is repeal the $80 billion slated for the IRS.
The era of one-party Democrat rule in Washington is over.
McCarthy is laser-focused on becoming the next House Speaker, but he'll have a slim majority and have to keep Republicans united around these priorities. Those targeted in the investigations say they aren't too worried. Dr. Anthony Fauci telling us he has nothing to hide.
And I'd be able to defend everything I've done.
Republicans are already facing obstacles. Some party members aren't on board with these investigations. And Democrats are still in control of the Senate and the White House and are ready to block any GOP bill that comes their way. Democrats say their priorities are the everyday issues that Americans face.
House Democrats are going to continue to put people over politics.
But wait, there's more. Republicans' list goes on. It includes letting parents have a say in their kids' curriculum at school, boosting domestic energy production to lower gas prices, and possibly ending Ukraine aid in its fight against Russia. But again, that means all House Republicans coming together, and then also it's likely to be blocked, any bill, when it heads over to the Democrat-controlled Senate. Ashley.
So question for you, Kelly, about the people you're talking to behind the scenes. It's one thing to get on camera behind a podium and say certain things. It's another to be concerned about the lay of the land. And during the midterms, we all heard nonstop, it's the economy, stupid. That's what voters really were worried about. So are any GOPers worried with all the focus on investigations that it's not about the economy or inflation?
Well, and that's a criticism that they heard from Democrats today. You know, they had a press conference, Republicans did, laying out their plans to investigate Biden and Hunter Biden and the family. And Democrats were saying, well, you campaigned on inflation and the economy. When are we going to talk about that? And, you know, they may get into that in the new Congress, but then it's the question of how are they going to work together? You have a Republican-controlled House, a Democrat-controlled Senate. So really, what are the solutions they're going to put on the table? And that's something we on the Hill have pressed the Republicans on. Okay, we want to address inflation, but how are we going to do that? And that's something we need to hear some concrete steps that they're going to take here and how they're going to work together to solve it. Because as you said, that's what voters really want to see.
Not to mention that razor thin majority that they have, which makes pretty much every single GOP congressman and woman extremely powerful. You have your job cut out for you. Kelly Meyer, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Legislating is hard and it takes time, but investigating the other party is something either party can do just as soon as they get control of the House or the Senate. And in the past, certainly in the last decade, both parties have gone to town on that premise. In January of 2011, Republicans who had just flipped the House began investigating Operation Fast and Furious. Do you remember that was the bungled sting operation involving arms sales and the death of a U.S. border agent? The probe dragged on for 6 years. The attorney general at the time, Eric Holder, was cited for contempt of Congress, though he didn't face any criminal prosecution. And then there was Benghazi. 2 years and $7 million of taxpayer money spent on six Republican investigations aimed chiefly at then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Despite all the previous investigations and all the talk about partisan agendas, I'm here to honor those we lost and to do what I can to aid those who serve us still.
So it's not a one-sided thing, it's a two-sided thing. When the Democrats won the House in 2018, the investigations began. Lots of them into Donald Trump's tax returns. And then, of course, you've probably heard nonstop coverage of January 6th. Both of those issues continue to be investigated to this day, but not for much longer, at least in the lower chamber anyway. The attention is most certainly about to turn instead to Hunter Biden and, of course, his father, Joe Biden. There will be thousands of questions asked and likely loads of subpoenas and a whole lot of news coverage, which many Americans haven't yet been exposed to, mostly because of the skepticism in the left-leaning media. So let's unpack some of the facts. Hunter Biden, the president's second-born son, has worked as a lobbyist and a lawyer for big money clients all around the world. When Joe Biden was VP, Hunter joined the board of an oil and gas company in Ukraine called Burisma. He made a lot of money there, all while that company was being investigated by the Ukrainians for bribery and money laundering. But so far, there has been no hard evidence that Joe Biden sold any favors or influence to Burisma or did anything to shield that company from the investigations. Nonetheless, Hunter Biden has been a constant target for Donald Trump, who's accused him of being corrupt, and Joe of being his accomplice. In fact, it was Donald Trump's infamous phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky pressuring that world leader to investigate both of the Bidens or risk losing aid dollars. And that was what led to Trump's first impeachment. In October of 2020, less than 3 weeks from the U.S. election, the New York Post obtained emails from Hunter Biden's laptop. It was a laptop that had been dropped off at a Delaware repair shop, but one that was never, ever picked up. The emails reportedly contained details of millions of dollars that Hunter Biden received from various sources, including partners in China, for reasons that are still not entirely clear. What is clear is that he may be in some very serious tax trouble. A federal investigation has been underway for at least 2 years now. The U.S. attorney in Delaware, somebody who Joe Biden kept in office even after Donald Trump had left the White House because he was a Trump appointee, that U.S. attorney has yet to make a decision on whether to charge Hunter Biden with any crime. But the incoming chair of the House Oversight Committee is not waiting and is making it crystal clear that Hunter isn't the only Biden on their radar.
The Biden family's business dealings implicate a wide range of criminality, from human trafficking to potential violations of the Constitution. In the 118th Congress, this committee will evaluate the status of Joe Biden's relationship with his family's foreign partners and whether he is a president who is compromised or swayed by foreign dollars and influence. I want to be clear. This is an investigation of Joe Biden.
I am joined now by Tim Farley. He is an emeritus contributor on SiriusXM's POTUS channel. Tim, great of you to be here, especially to sort of work through some of the things that we're about to hear a lot about, you know, for the next 2 years. Let's just start with the overall narrative. A lot of Democrats and certainly Democrat channels have just tuned this story out. They almost don't even think there's anything there. And some channels have almost said nothing but Hunter Biden. How is it that you can get to the American people and help them understand what's really going on with this investigation without it sounding like it's a partisan job on some side?
Well, I don't know that you can, especially with, I think you made the point earlier, which is that this election was about the economy. It was about crime. And it was about inflation for Republicans who hope to win. For Democrats, it was a little bit more about things like abortion and issues of democracy, but I think it's going to be very difficult to make the case, even with the reams of evidence that's being promised. It's going to be very difficult to make that case to voters if you are going to not pay attention to those issues that drove them to the polls just a few weeks ago.
So let me ask you something really technical. It's something about SARS, and it's not the SARS that we think of as a flu bug. It is a special activity report. There are apparently 150 special activity reports, according to the representative you just heard, James Comer. Those SAR reports are accumulated. They're apparently, you know, documents that banks file with the government in cases of suspected financial fraud. They're kind of like red flags. So what do we know about what Representative Comer said about 150 special activity reports accumulated by the Bidens?
I think the point is, he said these suspicious activity reports are out there, 150 of them, but we haven't seen them yet. I mean, if somebody's looked at the documents themselves, and I guess that he has, and if they are indeed what he says they are, then we should be able to see them and he should be able to make his case. But I think that just saying you have them is the first step. And if you're going to have the hearings, then have the hearings and then you can bring it up. But I don't know what's in those. And I know that there is a question in there somewhere about perhaps Hunter Biden being connected somehow to some Eastern European human trafficking, prostitution, but being connected to, being responsible for, those are all words of art. And I think you need a lot more detail before you start banking final and full accusations about anything. Suspicious activity reports are filed. Usually they're confidential. We'll see what we see if those hearings indeed do take place and they bring that evidence forward.
So then I think the next question is, if they start to have these hearings and lots of ugliness comes out, do you think this is the kind of thing that would automatically go to the big I, you know, impeachment? Because a lot of Republicans were very angry that their president was twice impeached. Do you think that that's something Joe Biden's going to face?
I'm sure there's anger. I'm not sure that at this point, it's going to be pretty tough to get that kind of a vote going. I mean, first of all, we don't even know if Kevin McCarthy is going to be the speaker. There's been so much of late saying that he is going to be challenged. And, that changes the whole complexion of what's going to take place. And if you have, and again, this is a point you made a little earlier, Ashley, if you have razor thin margin, then you are going to make some of those more moderate Republicans very powerful. They may not choose to go down that road. Speaker Pelosi, in her time, was very reluctant to even go down that impeachment road because of the fact that it could wind up being harmful to the Democrats. I don't know that it helped them. I don't know how much it hurt them, but I don't know that that's probably the smartest thing Republicans can do, is to try to impeach Joe Biden through Hunter Biden. I know that Congressman Comer said today that this would be an investigation into Joe Biden and not Hunter Biden, but we'll have to see exactly what he tries to bring forward.
Got to get used to hearing those two names a whole lot together in not too flattering terms. Okay, Tim Farley, thank you. We'll have you back on this topic. I'm certain of that. Thank you for this.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what's the future of the Democratic Party now that Nancy Pelosi says she's going to step down and the House Republicans gain the majority? Morning in America is going to continue this conversation tomorrow, 7, 6 Central, right after early morning on News Nation. And still to come on this program, some people call it partisanship, other people call it discord, but let's call it what it really is: rudeness and disrespect. And what's running rampant in Congress is trickling down to us, the voters.
Oh my God!
I have a breathing problem. My doctor would not let me wear
Oh, she's in her face. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
No!
You gave me one f***ing warning. One warning. That's it. You gave me one f***ing warning. I pulled it up the second he said something. The second he said something, I pulled it over my nose.
You guys are cult members. I'm not wearing a mask.
After the break, I'm going to talk to an expert in civility. And yes, there is such a thing. Why are so many people, especially in D.C., flashing their inner ugly all the time? And hey, why not take the naughty or nice test yourself and see if you actually might be part of this problem? There is such a thing, and we have it, and it's coming up. Bickering, backstabbing, and berating, these are three B's, and they're all around us these days, and maybe nowhere more than in Washington, D.C. We send people to the Capitol to put their differences aside for the good of the country, but it appears not to be working. A recent study by the University of Winnipeg in Canada, where I'm from, analyzed the tweets of every member of the House and Senate between 2009 and 2019, and the researchers gave each of the tweets a score based on how rude and disrespectful it was. And it turns out the tweets were 23% more disrespectful in 2019 than they were 10 years earlier in 2009. Again, these are our lawmakers, the people who are supposed to be modeling behavior. And it looks like their bad behavior might be trickling down to the rest of us. I think about the customer who screams at the store employee because the line's too long, or all those social media trolls constantly posting awful comments. And how about teenagers these days freely dropping F-bombs right in front of their teachers, and sometimes not even the teenagers, the little ones? The world certainly does seem a lot more disrespectful, and the numbers do back it up. Another study by Georgetown University found that 98% of workers have been the victims of uncivil or rude behavior. And that stat, 98%, is up from just 50% in 2011 and 25% back in 1998. 73% of workers said it is not unusual for customers to treat them badly, and that's up from 61% in 2012. So what on earth is causing all of this? And more importantly, how do we make America nice again? I'm joined by Christine Poreth. She's a professor of management at Georgetown University, and she's the person behind the Georgetown study. So I'll just thank you right off the bat for being here. It's a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully that's a nice way to start this conversation. But Christine, is this really like an exponential decline, or is this just sort of a continuum? Like, we've just gotten worse since the 1700s. Like, how bad is it?
Well, we've certainly gotten a lot worse. I think over the last few years, all the stress and negativity surrounding us has made things quite a bit worse. But we've been on a decline, as you mentioned, for about the last couple decades. So it's not a shock, given how much people have been suffering and how stressed out people have been.
All right. So what I found fascinating is that you actually have a civility quiz on your website. It's ChristinePorath.com, by the way, P-O-R-A-T-H. And the things that you ask are really interesting. These are some of the scenarios. So grab a pencil, folks, and take a note. If you neglect to say please and thank you, if you use email when face-to-face is needed, if you take too much credit for group work, if you keep people waiting needlessly, if you don't listen and you interrupt others, if you speak unkindly or spread rumors, or if you insult others. Every one of those looks kind of normal, I hate to say it. Am I off the mark?
No, I think that's the idea, is how consistently are you doing these things, and how mindful can you be in terms of improving things. So ideally, you hone in on one or two things and you look to improve things along the way. So it's just a checkpoint. But in reality, I'd love people to be checking with others, because most of this stems not from bad people or even bad intentions. We lack self-awareness. We don't realize simple things that we may be doing that may rub people the wrong way.
And I noticed that, you know, some of the folks who weigh in on this, say that stress is through the roof for a lot of people. Social media certainly has not helped in that. I'd say that's one of the leading drivers. The politicians have been awful. Some of these tweets, we use foul language now like it's pretty standard. Parenting has changed a lot too. So this isn't just a problem to talk about on TV. This is actually something that affects the bottom line for businesses too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So what we find is that it takes people totally off track when we take this in, whether that's through email or through even witnessing it. People have a really hard time focusing. It hijacks focus. It hijacks attention. People perform about 30% worse cognitively. Working memory operates a lot slower, a lot more errors. Creativity declines. People are three times less helpful to others, even when they just witness it. If you're around it, you're much more likely to quit as a result. So the Great Resignation, a lot of the data behind that is actually number one driver is toxic leaders.
You know, it's astounding to see those statistics. Those are bottom line things for even small businesses to really take a look at. You know, 80% missing work. Because they're thinking about the rudeness, et cetera. It's amazing. So I love this too, the solutions, what we can do to reduce rudeness. So I'm going to throw up a list so everybody watching can take note. Get an outside audit, video your interactions and then watch them back. Courses and training are often very helpful. Reward or punish certain behaviors. Unfortunately, the list isn't making it on the air. Intervene when you see rude behavior and be more mindful. Okay, but the big question is, how optimistic are you that this can actually change, even with all those great solutions?
I'm very optimistic. I mean, I think, you know, it would help if we can reduce our stress and be more mindful of this. But I think a big part of it is just becoming more aware of what the costs are and how it affects others. So the good news is that civility spreads. And so our small actions make a difference. And you don't have to be a leader. You know, it makes a difference how we treat our family, how we show up, whether that's at school or at work or in our communities. And so I hope that whether it's a please, a thank you, a hello, it will all help.
I agree. Thank you. So nice to have you, Christine Fora. I really appreciate this.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Still ahead tonight, a story that is just astounding. A horrifying mass murder mystery in Ohio. Four students slashed to death by a weapon that hasn't yet been found and a killer who hasn't been caught. The latest next. College campuses will be soon emptying out all over the country, but at the University of Idaho, it's already empty and the silence is eerie. The students there are terrified, and the police now admit they have reason to be. Last Sunday, four students were stabbed to death, butchered inside their housing off campus. And this was the reaction from the university president.
Their loss has been devastating, and they were bright lights in our community and are deeply missed and remain in our thoughts and our prayers.
When news of the quadruple murder first broke, police told the community it was a targeted attack and that there wasn't reason for anyone else to be concerned. And that obviously did not sit well with the people there. Four college kids savagely murdered in their home, no one arrested, no reason to worry? Hardly likely. And then it turned out there was plenty of reason to worry. The killer hasn't yet been caught. But here's what may be the last photo of all four of the victims together. It was posted by 21-year-old Kaylee Goncalves just hours before she and 20-year-old Zaina Kernodal and 20-year-old Ethan Chapin and 20-year-old Madison Mogan were murdered. Police say Ethan and Zaina were at a party on campus earlier that night, while Madison and Kaylee went to a local bar downtown. All four of them arrived back at home around 1:45 in the morning, and what happened after that is a mystery. But whatever did go on, it was one of the most brutal massacres police in Moscow, Idaho have ever seen.
The four were stabbed with a knife, but no weapon has been located at this time. There was no sign of forced entry into the residence.
First responders said the crime scene was horrendous. Blood could be seen dripping from the side of the house. Even the coroner called the crime horrifying. The killer is believed to have used a Rambo-style knife. And we only know that because a local store owner reportedly said that police came in and asked him if he'd sold a knife like that, and he hadn't. And the weapon hasn't yet been found either. Police don't even have a suspect yet or a motive. They do have a video from a food truck taken just hours before the murders. A man can be seen lingering in the background, just feet away from Kaylee and Madison, the two victims who spent their evening downtown. And just yesterday, police revealed that two other roommates were actually home at the time of the murders, but those two were not harmed in any way. The community is shattered, of course, but also confused and angry as to why police backtracked on that claim that there was no public cause for concern.
We do not have a suspect at this time, and that individual is still out there.
When we come back, a live interview with the coroner who performed the autopsies on the students. What's next? To say that police in Idaho are baffled tonight might be an understatement. Four college kids at the University of Idaho were found dead in a barbaric scene, a savage killer having used a military-styled knife to butcher all of them. And that killer is still on the loose tonight. The autopsies have now been completed, and the coroner who performed them is kind enough to be live with me tonight. Kathy Mabbitt is the Latah County Medical Examiner. Ms. Mabbitt, thank you so much for being here. The first question I have for you is, what was the condition of the bodies when they arrived at your lab?
Well, I am not the medical examiner. I'm the coroner, and the autopsies were done in Spokane, Washington, at the medical examiner's office up there. So
were you present for any of it, or you received their results?
No, I was there when the autopsies were done.
So were you able to determine that the conditions of the bodies when they arrived?
Yes, they had multiple stab wounds, and all of them have been ruled murders.
All of them had been ruled murders, yes. I don't have to say the obvious, but it is extremely difficult to stab four people to death. So that's why I asked the specifics about the conditions. Were there defensive wounds? Was there anything unique to their wounds that would have told a story?
There are likely some defensive wounds, but no, there just were a lot of stab wounds. And it was late at night or early in the morning. So it seems likely that maybe they were sleeping.
Were they found in separate areas of the house?
That hasn't been disclosed yet.
Can you tell me, when you say that they might have been sleeping, were they found in beds?
Yes.
And so can you tell me if there were multiple stab wounds per victim, or were these sort of, individual lethal stab wounds that may have been less in number but more in lethality?
There were multiple stab wounds, yes, on them. So, and
were there? Go ahead.
And most of them had just like one that was the lethal stab wound. Yes.
Can you describe what that one might have been?
But they were to the fatal ones were to the chest area or the upper body area.
Were there, and I only ask this because it sometimes determines what kind of a crime this was, a crime of passion, a random crime, a fight, a struggle. Was there, were any of them slashed? Were any of their necks cut? Or were these all puncture wounds?
Well, it was a pretty large knife, so it's really hard to call them puncture wounds. And they were definitely stabbings. And, it has to be somebody that's pretty angry in order to stab four people to death.
So it's fascinating that I'm reading that the DNA testing is still to come, that those bodies are going to go to a crime lab for DNA testing. But we are, this is Sunday that this happened. We're multiple days since, and there's a killer on the loose. I'm curious as to why the DNA testing hasn't happened already.
Well, the bodies have been released to the families. The DNA testings were, things from the crime scene have been sent to forensic labs for DNA testing, and then there were lots of swabs that were taken at the autopsies, as well as fingernail clippings, their clothing. All of those things have been taken to the forensic lab for the DNA testing. That's where it would come from.
And that doesn't, it usually takes a long time, but when there's an exigent circumstance like this, it's often expedited. Do you expect that these results will come back quickly? Again, there is a killer on the loose, so to know that DNA result would be critical.
Right, and I don't know the time frame, but yes, it's all being expedited. There's lots of Idaho State Police Forensic Lab and the FBI, and so they have all been transported in there. They're working on those things. I don't know the time frame for that.
Ms. Mabbitt, we showed a picture a moment ago of a wall on the outside of the house. It looked like the foundation on the outside of the house. I'm going to ask the control room to put that picture up again. This was fairly shocking to see. It's blood dripping on the outside of the house, almost as though it may be seeping from the inside. Does that sound congruent with the results of the crime scene that you were able to ascertain from your work?
From my observations, yes.
And can you tell me if that means that this might have been one of the bedrooms or where the beds were that one of the victims was stabbed, this particular area of the house?
I think that's pretty likely, yes.
Is there anything else, any other information you can shed on that particular scene?
No. It's not, I mean, my job is to deal with the manner and cause of death, and that is really being done by the forensics and the crime scene investigators.
And everyone does their job differently, but one thing I do know, and that is that when determining manner and cause of death, it's not just the science in the lab, it's also the circumstances at the crime scene. And I'm assuming that you got a pretty voluminous volume of information that you had to go through. Is there anything that stood out in that volume of information that you received that might lead police to say it was a targeted attack? Because that's confounded a lot of us.
Right. Yes, I don't share that same opinion, really. I, you know, there's four people that have all been killed at one scene, and four young college students. So all of them were stabbed and all of them were killed. So I'm not sure how that is targeted.
I mean, it certainly seemed odd to me as well. Can you tell me if there were at least signs of struggle, meaning maybe the first victim was sleeping, but the ensuing noise and confusion may have awakened the others, and they may have come to fruitlessly try to fight off this killer?
I think that's one of the things that that law enforcement is looking at. I was notified shortly after law enforcement was called to the scene, but I didn't actually go there for several hours because they're the ones who have to detail, look for the evidence and take the pictures and videos from the scene. So I think they would have more information than I would about that.
Inside that house, how big is the scene?
It's a large house. So it's, yeah. I mean, it's a big scene to investigate.
Multiple floors? The incident happened on multiple floors?
Well, it's a multiple floor house, yes.
But did the crime happen on multiple floors, meaning they had to do forensics and there were victims and evidence on multiple floors?
I think there's evidence on multiple floors, yes.
Were there bodies found on multiple floors in different locations, or were they all found together?
I am not authorized to release that right now.
Well, I certainly respect what you can and can't do, and I really appreciate you coming on with us tonight. This is just a horrendous, horrendous situation. Kathy Mabbitt, thank you for your work and for your time.
Oh, sure. Thank you very much.
Joining me now live is Rachel Sun. She's a reporter for Northwest Public Broadcasting in the Lewiston Tribune, and she's live in Moscow, Idaho as well. Rachel, thanks for being with me. I'm sure you were probably listening along as we had the conversation with the coroner. What really stood out to me was that she believes that these victims might have been sleeping, or at least one of them might have been sleeping. Is that something that you've been hearing as well?
That's certainly one of the ideas that's been floating around. There's a lot of speculation on this case. I think that, you know, the fact that police haven't released a lot of information has been one of the driving factors, definitely, of a lot of frustration among the community, but we just don't know right now.
These two other roommates that were in the house, you know, originally there was a much ado made about the fact that they took hours and hours, like 9 hours before calling 911. But that would stand to reason if someone comes home late, goes to bed on a Saturday night after whatever you do in college on a Saturday night, you might sleep in until early afternoon and then wake up to, you know, a horror scene. What's more interesting is that the 911 report says that the call came in as an unconscious person. Is there any more clarity as to that? Because the scene that we are hearing about is not an unconscious person. It's a hellscape.
Yeah, that is a point of confusion. I specifically asked the police chief about that at yesterday's press conference, and he could not provide more clarity. He said that's how the call came in. So no more information on that, unfortunately.
And we're being kept in the dark. Sometimes I, you know, pretty clear on that. There's an investigation and they don't want to compromise that. But what about the parents of these kids? Are they as confounded and frustrated? And are they at least being cared for and having as many of their questions answered as possible?
You know, I haven't gotten to speak with the parents personally, but from the statements that the families have put out, we know that, you know, they are very desperate for answers. And some of them have said, we really want the police to be as transparent as possible and to share as much information as they can. Several of them have also said that they really don't want people spreading unsubstantiated rumors. And so there's some sense that maybe because there's not as much information coming from police as people would like, that's almost fueling the fire. And people are just grasping at whatever they can, you know, imagine might happen because there is so little information.
Rachel, I only have about 20 seconds later. Are those two other roommates providing helpful information, or are they just as shocked and confused as the rest of us?
You know, I really can't say. I haven't heard from those roommates, but I'm sure that this is an extremely traumatic event for them. So,
just astounding.
The rest of the family, friends.
Just unbelievable. So appreciate your help in this, Rachel. Thank you. Rachel Sun reporting to us from Idaho tonight. And we'll certainly stay on this story. Thanks for being with us. A powerful member of the Senate Judiciary Committee is demanding some answers, and she is not the only one. Some local investigators are on this, too. It's a budding investigation that no one saw coming, unless, of course, you are one of the tens of thousands of Taylor Swift fans who tried to buy tickets for her upcoming concert tour. How on earth did this become an issue for Washington, D.C.? That's next. All right. Thank you, Chris. News from the world of Taylor Swift. And trust me, it is earth-shattering. Ticketmaster did something today that broke the internet. Because of how badly they botched the pre-sale tickets for the Taylor's upcoming tour, they have all out canceled the general sale that was supposed to start tomorrow. The disastrous pre-sale left thousands of fans waiting in an online queue for up to 10 hours before the site ultimately crashed, leaving Swifties bewildered and broken. Tonight, StubHub is offering tickets in the secondary market. And buckle up, folks, because one ticket for the Atlanta show, one ticket is listed for $85,000. To be fair, there is also a seat up in the nosebleeds that's going for $446. But in Arlington, Texas, a single ticket was listed at almost $39,000. And in Tampa, one single ticket was on sale for over $28,000. And if you think all of this is just about a concert tour, it's not. Legislators are now getting involved because Ticketmaster and Live Nation control more than 70% of the ticketing market. The Tennessee Attorney General says he's going to investigate this whole mess. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar is pressing the Ticketmaster CEO for answers. For its part, Ticketmaster is blaming Taylor Swift, saying that demand was way more than they could handle because Taylor hasn't done a concert in 4 years. So it's Taylor's fault. Ticketmaster, I'm going to speak for Taylor Swift for a minute here. You know all too well that you're just creating bad blood with your don't blame me story. You know, I knew you were in trouble the minute your site crashed. How could you leave all those fans looking at a blank space? Talk about an anti-hero. You need to calm down. You need to shake it off. Maybe begin again. Or we are never, ever getting back together. That's it for us. Up next, NBA star Charles Barkley says, this has made